Welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy, my call sign is AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. We also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also have an Echo Link node available for use. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the TechLNet, or you could use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob, KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, everybody out there. Looking forward to a good net tonight. So let the net begin. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. From your lips to amateur radio's ears, I hope this is going to be a more active session than we've had in the last month or so, but time will tell. So we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they would like to roll around, feel free, hit that push to talk, and tell us what you got.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo. Helping support the net out here, and I don't know, what do you know about solar controllers?
It depends what you mean by a solar controller. Are you talking about solar cells and inverters and such?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm looking for a new solar controller. Yeah, for like basically to take like 18 to 24 volts from a solar panel and charge up a lithium-ion phosphate battery. I've got the panels, and I even have a couple of inverters, but I noticed that they're very noisy. So I'm looking for some that are RF-friendly. I know Genesun has one, but it's quite expensive. And then there's another one that, I forget the name brand that puts it out. It's probably about maybe $40, $45 less expensive. So before I pull the trigger on getting an RF quiet solar charger, I was wondering if anybody had any input out there to RF quiet solar controllers, aside from the Genesun, was it the GV10, I believe it is?
KC2RC.
Well, I never really played around with converters. The problem is what you found it, that if you really want a clean inverter, they cut a lot of corners because most people don't care about background hash noise and such. And so that's where every company cheaps out on the inverters. To have a nice clean AC signal, you're going to have to pay for it unless you find someone who wants to sell you theirs used. Have you ever considered trying to use a solar cell that was more amenable to a direct connection, you know, something that was specced for something like 14 volts of output, and you know, get something like a power gate or some such and plug it in and use that as a means to charge up your battery? You know, I mean, it's a kind of a quick and dirty approach to it, but it certainly gets around the RF noise of an inverter. Joseph, are you out there?
Keying up on the wrong radio is what I'm doing. Oh, boy. Sorry about that. So, yeah, I'm basically just looking for a clean controller, you know, from solar panel to battery and stuff like that. I have not tried those up converters or those, what do they call it, those buck converters either. But I don't know if that would really be a solution to my problem. I'm just really looking to keep the battery topped off while I'm out, if I'm going to go do POTA or field day or whatever the case is. You know, I have a 50-amp battery that puts out about, well, probably about 640-something watts. I've got it wired up in a battery box with Anderson power poles, you know, USB, PD, you know, just everything nice, nice fuse box and all that good stuff. So I just recently acquired a 100-amp battery. What do I need all that power for? I don't know, but I've got a 100-amp battery now that I'm looking also to do in a solar generator type of a situation that I've got the other one. But like I said, the one that I have now, it's pretty noisy when I am charging it. So, you know, whether I charge it solar or I charge it with the one that I plug in is just absolutely a mess. As a matter of fact, I just shut the radios off when I'm charging anything with that charger. But just looking for some things that I could do. You know, I was about to attempt the capacitor route to see if any putting a capacitor in line or two would help clear that up and see how far I could go with that. But just thinking about some ideas and thoughts to clear up that RF. Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo. Back on over to Net Control.
Yes, this is AC2GS. I don't think capacitors would suffice, unfortunately. Capacitors are great if you're trying to take the ripple out of a DC supply, but you're using a dirty inverter. If you have an oscilloscope available, you should just plug that into your oscilloscope with the proper attenuation and see what those waveforms look like. They're probably a mess of square waves, and that's what's kind of generating all that hash. And that's the problem with inexpensive inverters. It takes significantly more components and EE smarts to build an inverter that's a perfect sine wave. It's the difference in UPSs for computers between the $90 or $100 UPSs and the $400 and $500 UPSs. The cheaper ones, again, will crank out AC, but the dirtiest stuff that you could see at the end of the cheapest generator versus for UPSs that cost $500, they have proper sine wave, which is what you want for this particular case. Again, if you could somehow kind of skirt the whole idea of going into AC and just kind of working DC to DC, you probably would have a better chance. But, you know, you have to just make sure that you're, you know, either getting a solar cell that's rated for 40 volts so you don't have to really bother too much with voltage regulation, or get some kind of a voltage a DC regulator that can take the power output that you're going to feed it with the solar cell. Probably not a big problem with solar cells unless you got an enormous one.
They're two 100 watt microcrystalline. They're flexible, but I wouldn't flex them too much. I guess that could be it, man. I'm not really sure, but I probably will be ordering the Genesun. What is it? Genasun. It's a solar charger. And from the videos I've seen, and from what other people have said, and all the comments, that's the one to be putting in these battery boxes if you want to be using a solar panel while out doing POTA or SOTA or field day or anything out there. But yeah, and you know, I'm mainly doing it for like camping. So, you know, when I was camping last year, it didn't really, make a difference because I really wasn't using it for the radio. So, I didn't really care. But now that I'm realizing like how much of a noise is out there, it's like, yeah, I got to take care of that for sure. All right, Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo, back on over to Net Control. And I don't want to hog up your whole net, brother.
Okay, very good, Joseph. Thank you for participating. And please, when you do get that component and you test it out a little bit, come back and give us a report.
Hopefully. I absolutely will. Hopefully, I'll get some good video, too.
Okay, very good. Let's see if we got anyone else out there. I hope we do. This is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net, and we've been open for business for a few minutes, and if anyone has any questions or topics they'd like to discuss or comments they'd like to make, please hit that push to talk.
Hey, Roy, this is AC2ZB. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, William. I'm glad to see you there on the Echo Link window. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, fair enough, considering all this rain we've had recently. I have a question for you, though. I'm not sure what to do about this, but I have a lot of old test equipment that I can't keep here anymore, and I don't really know what to do with it. I'm probably going to end up, taking it to a recycling center or something like that, but it seems like some of it still works. The question is, do you think this stuff is worth anything at all for anybody, if I should make any trouble to find somebody that might be interested in it?
Well, as the years progress, it becomes a bigger and bigger problem to find someone. I am sure that somewhere there are people interested, especially if the price is right, like, driving over to your place and picking it up. The problem is finding these people. In the old days, a lot more amateur radio operators had a more general a taste in equipment. Nowadays, unfortunately, there's a lot of hams that don't quite know how to use a volt ohmmeter. So I think there is a market still. It sort of depends upon what specific type of gear you got. I know one guy who revels. He drives all over the country to find esoteric, very used equipment that they're already selling for scrap metal, and he keeps it around with the hope of trying to figure out how to fix it eventually someday. So, if it isn't taking up too much room, and you want to put a little comment in Eham, or there's a bunch of other places on the internet, and see what kind of response you get.
Welcome to the KC2RC repeater system.
Well, I don't know about Eham. That's one way to advertise. Certainly, I was thinking there might be ways to advertise. Basically, the deal is you could either come over and pick it up, or pay the shipping. I'll just walk it over to FedEx. But these things are heavy. They require a lot of packaging, so I'm sure just packaging alone would be expensive, and then wherever it's going to go because of the weight. So anyway, it's on my mind because I have things that really I shouldn't have anymore.
Yeah, I understand, William. I mean, you're not the only one who has that problem. That's one of the reasons for some of the things being hawked at these hamventions and such. The problem is that Limark, every Limark hamvention, some guy empties his garage and puts it on the table there, and I tend to think that most of that stuff ends up going back into the garage. So the problem is really finding the right person for that type of equipment. And they're kind of few and far between. There's the Sussex hamvention. If you're so inclined and you have a means of transportation, you could haul it over there and see if someone wants to take it off your hands. But I mean, otherwise, like I said, I would try things like Eham or similar type of situations, and you just explain it to them the way you explained it to me. Like I told you, I know there's one guy who takes his truck all over the country to pick up these things because the shipping fees would be enormous. So he'll drive around near Chicago, and he'll load up his truck with hundreds of pounds of basically scrap metal with a user's manual that's attached to it. So I would suggest considering those aspects. Ultimately, a lot of this stuff is never going to find a new home and is going to end up as scrap metal and such. But I could understand if you have some emotional attachment to it and you would prefer it going to someone who will use it and enjoy it.
Yeah, I know. Some of these things are really cool, but, they're only cool for me. Like, I have a selective voltmeter that we used to use for the testing out the multiplex units that were going into the FM exciters. And basically you had a baseband that was stacked up to 10 megahertz with 4 kilohertz telephone calls. You could drive up and down and listen to each of the phone calls and, you know, test out the various levels on the lines and check the signaling frequencies. And I used to do that when I was young. Ended up holding on to one of those instruments, but I guess it's totally useless now because you don't even use that technology anymore. And it's basically just a radio.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is when the test equipment kind of outdates the technology. But, you know, there are still guys out there who will take almost anything. And, you know, at the very least, they'll pull the parts out and use it for some project or possibly even try and retrofit it to some other use. So I'm sure there are people out there. There are in tens of thousands of them, unfortunately. And how you get in touch with them, even in this age of the internet, can be problematic.
I was wondering if you'd ever heard of any schools taking this up to give to kids to let them just take it apart. But that may or may not be a good idea. Once you start taking something apart, it never works again.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's also another age that came and went. You know, most kids are working on telemetry circuits and, you know, balloons and drones and stuff like that. You know, if you kind of sit down and tell some young person about the old days of the Army surplus radio equipment around City Hall, they just kind of pull up a pillow and take a nap. So I'm a little bit pessimistic about whether there are schools that have enough people, both teachers and students, interested in playing around with old equipment.
Yeah, I would think they would always want the latest technology. When I went to school, we were using 50-year-old equipment in the labs. And we thought it was so great that we're supposed to be getting a modern education on 50-year-old equipment.
Well, that's the school system. I'm sure schools aren't up to date even on technology, but I don't think they're that far back. So, and it's a different kind of motivating force. Again, we've had a few kids from technical schools come by to the in-person meetings, and you know their primary interests at that time were telemetry, you know, sophisticated telemetry systems. So again, it would be nice if there was a school that kind of featured that kind of aspect of historic electronics, but I don't think this world has those things anymore.
And I think if people were doing that kind of stuff, they would be wanting new tools that would work with the internet and work with, you know, like those little VNAs and spectrum analyzers that are just so light and handheld. Just totally amazing that we had to have such big clunky things to get this over all those years ago. Anyway, I just was throwing it out there because I'm just stacking this stuff up, thinking about what I'm going to do with it and going through it. So anyway, back to you. Now, Roy, have a great evening.
Thank you, William. Thank you for participating. I hope you find a good place to send off that equipment. It's a shame. I mean, I knew a gentleman, may rest in peace, became a silent key a couple of years ago. He had a house stuffed with test equipment of all kinds, from ancient to state-of-the-art. And when he passed away, his sisters, with the help of Limark, were able to sell off a lot of that stuff. I don't know how much got left behind that had to just be junked, unfortunately, but I'm sure a percentage of it.
Yeah, I would think that it would also, because this gear didn't come with manuals and it had its quirks on the various knobs that have to be kicked sideways to make them work and stuff like that. So, you know, without the operator, the clock stopped never to play again when the old man died, you know. So they don't really come with manuals, the old stuff. And then if you used it, but anyway, I got a 10-meter radio. It's not that great, but I want to give that away. So how do I advertise that? Can I put like a swap and shop list in the club newsletter and send you a note? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, sure. If you want to, just send me a note. I don't know how many people download the newsletter or read the newsletter, but yeah, I'll put it in there.
Okay, because I mean, I'm gonna pack this stuff up neatly and then store it in the basement, and eventually I'll have to clear the basement. But until that time, you know, I'm gonna try to get advertise that the stuff is there if anybody wants it. So. Just trying to figure out my plan here because I've got to change things around. You know, it seems to be a new year. Things got to be done.
Okay, William. Well, like I said, if you want to offer it to people in the club, send me an email and I'll put it in the next newsletter or I'll put it in the email that the newsletter comes in and so that the people who read it hopefully will get the message and maybe they'll be interested.
This is the KCQRC repeater. Please use PL88.5.
I'm going to get it all ready to go, and then if somebody wants to drive over and get it immediately, boom, they can just pick it up. It'll be in a box. So, anyway, thanks a lot. Have a great evening. I got to get back to what I was doing. Have a bye. 73.
Okay, William. Thanks again for participating. I do appreciate it. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month and at 9 p.m. And we're open for business until we run out of people to talk to. So if you have a question or a comment or want to roll around some kind of technology, especially amateur radio related technology, then please hit that push to talk and say hello. Well, Bob, it looks like we got another quiet technical net here. Again, I don't know what to tell you. We'll give it a couple more minutes, see if someone suddenly arrives. I mentioned to a gentleman who left the club for a while and came back to the club that we're available on these technical nets. He actually came to the Limark technical net, so I thought it would be interesting if he came to the Kings County Radio Club technical net a few days later, but I guess not. Perhaps he has other things going on tonight.
Echo 2, Yankee Golf, do you copy?
Yes, I do, Sam. How are you?
I'm trying to say hello with my other rig, but apparently it wasn't getting out. I'm using my handheld. Would you mind if I try to reach you with my other rig?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, so that's why, but...
It's a rather noisy signal, Sam. I'd say about, 50-60% noise.
Rather noisy.
You're much, much clearer on the handy talkie, Sam.
Good evening, N2GO2 here.
Hello, Howard. How are you?
Say good evening. Was just on the phone with a friend of mine, buddy in Pennsylvania, fellow ham. So I figured, heard you were looking for check-ins. I figured I'd just jump in and say hello. I guess it's a little quiet tonight.
Yeah, it's a quiet net in general, unfortunately. There aren't that many people with technical questions, apparently. Everyone's figured everything out.
Well, I guess I could ask something a little technical. We've got the big one, one of the big amateur radio fests coming up. Xenia Dayton this coming weekend. Anything new and interesting that they're talking about? Amplifier... Wise, SDR, any new hardware coming out?
KQNDY, radio test.
I hear you, Andy.
Between the input and the output of the repeater to see if I could hear the other stations, but no copy.
You didn't hear Andy? That's curious. I haven't heard any pre-announcements. Usually they don't do things like that. If anything, we'll kind of pick it up secondhand 2 or 3 days after the fact. For a communications hobby, we're not good at communicating. There'll probably be some more information about the new Yaesu that hasn't cleared the FCC yet, and you know, probably one or two companies have something like a linear amplifier to show, but I'm not particularly that terribly optimistic. I mean, I'm always looking to see what good old Flex Radio might be coming out with, but I think they basically did what they were going to do with the 8000 series. They refreshed the two lower models, and there just is nothing like the 6700 anymore, and I don't think they're going to come out with one. They still have a couple of them in supply, so if you kind of ask pretty please and you want to pay the money, they'll sell you a 6700, but I'll be astounded if I ever hear about an 8700 from them. It just doesn't seem to be in the cards.
Yeah, I guess not yet. Anyway, a few friends of mine, I'm sure, same for you, are heading out there. Either they're flying in or they're driving there or whatever. So, you know, it'd be nice to go again. I think someday I guess I'll get back there. Albeit maybe just for one day, but we'll see what happens with that. But I guess we'll keep an ear and an eye out to see what's going on. One of the guys that's beta tested for Flex, I think you might know him or know of him, Dave, setting out there now, a friend of mine, WO2X. So I was actually on Sue's repeater this morning, JNF. There's some people looking for, to get, one of the guys is looking for a new rig. And I said the 7300 is very nice, but I figured ICOM might be coming out with something to replace it because it's a little long on the tooth. And I kind of, I'm looking at my station right now. Everything I have is fairly old. Old technology, meaning at least more than 10 years old. I guess computer-wise, it would be an antique, but maybe amateur radio, not so old. I think the newest radio I have is an FT5, which is a pretty up-to-date HT, which is Fusion, if you're familiar with the newer Yaesu system Fusion. But I'm definitely behind a little bit with the updates to my old Elecraft, which I barely even used these last few years. So I'll take a listen for Andy Y or maybe Sam on the input, if I could hear them a little bit better. But I think the repeater might hear them better than I can.
KC2RC.
As far as technologies, surprisingly, technology hasn't made that much of an advance in 10 years. I mean, I bought software-defined radios 11 years ago or something, and they were around, you know, 5-6 years before then. That's kind of state-of-the-art. All the big three, Japanese and such, are either shifting over to hybrids or full-on software-defined radios. Sort of the same thing with computers, with the exception of AI and graphics cards. The computer, you know, I mean, I have a desktop that's, I think, about 6 years old, and it's as functional as you could buy today. Again, with the exception being that you probably can't run as many frames in a game that you can with the new graphics cards. If you got a ridiculous amount of money to spend on, you know, the graphic cards are going for something like $1,500, $2,000 in some cases, which is absurd.
Just dragging my feet a little bit. Yeah, it's incredible. I used to, years ago, joke with people about video cards. You see, or technology, maybe you're better off buying stock in some of these companies because you're going to probably see a gain into it if you buy Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA, especially NVIDIA, instead of just getting something that's going to be dropped like a rock right after you buy it, especially with video cards, as you know. So you know how this technology is. But, I'm thinking, I'm looking at everything. Everything is out of date. Because, you know, you're right also with the computers. I've got an older Dell machine I use only pretty much just for ham radio. I'm using the legacy software on this to run the old Flex stuff. And figure if I get anything else, maybe some of the software to run like a Hermes. I was thinking of getting one of those boards. I've heard some nice things about them, and they're I definitely have amplifiers that would be that would run it just fine. A friend of mine has one of those boards. He's very happy with it. They sound good, and that's a great deal for an SDR rig from Apache Labs. There's a number of guys that are playing with that on the air with the SDR stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they've been around in one form or another for almost as long as Flex Radio has been. I mean, you know, the Flex Radio is Youngblood's commercial venture, as opposed to this started as Arizona, New Mexico, user groups that had a lot of smart guys, and they put their heads together and they came up with the boards and the software and all kinds of stuff, and then the Indian company just licensed it. So it's good stuff. Again, there's nothing special compared to my 6700. I mean, for one reason or another, I guess the market didn't really seem to need a something capable of that many simultaneous bands, but I still love to play with it, even as my number of antennas decrease, unfortunately. So, I mean, similarly, you know, most of my stuff is at least 6-7 years old. I think maybe my Fusion stuff is the newest stuff that I have. But, you know, I don't consider it that innovative as much as my 6700. And, you know, I got my little LP500 digital lot meter station, all the nice little toys that I've accrued probably over the first 5 years of my hobby. And still working, knock on wood. And, I haven't really lusted after anything that I've seen announced. They're kind of pale shadows of the stuff that I decided to buy back then.
NTGOT, I must admit, that LP500 I got, when did I get that? About 6-7 years ago. That's definitely one of my newer acquisitions. That was a good purchase. Good investment, I should say. Those are still highly sought after, and I think you had even reminded me a number of months ago that there's still, I think, no updates for them from this fella. But brilliant piece of technology, and I got that LP500. Never really played around with the software and sold anything for it, but I didn't even get that other attachment, just so I could see the exciter power as well as the amplifier. I just have that one that I bought for it, which is fine. And it's a super duper instrument, it really is. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like mine. I have two HF measuring devices, which one got hooked up to the amplifier, the other one got hooked up to the driver, and I was able to see I play around with the trapezoidal image, and I even was able to snag I don't really remember if it was a VHF or a UHF coupler. Those are still kind of quasi-experimental, I think, in Larry's mind, and Larry keeps telling people that he is very slowly working on a beta upgrade to the software, but I wouldn't suggest anyone hold their breath.
I know years ago how many people really liked the LP100. So, you know what? It's a nice addition to the shack. And, I guess I wouldn't mind getting the VHF one if he were to introduce one. So perhaps I should take a look at his site. I haven't been on his on Larry's site in quite some time. So that's about it. So conditions on 10, I don't know if you're listening. Oh, no, you weren't. You closed it out, I think, after, 12:30, 1 o'clock last Sunday. I couldn't make it on. I was going to get on, but I got on late. But the band was not in such great shape. I did get on with Ruben for a while. And, I'm going to get on, I guess, what is it, the last Sunday this month? I'll be running, or the 25th, so. I was on for a bit, but band didn't seem to be all that open when I was on a few days ago.
I think you told me, this is AC2GS, by the way, I think you told me the 25th. It was dead. It was dead Sunday. Not even local. Nothing. The only thing I saw were some noise spurs that were local. Otherwise, it was nothing. So I talked to a few people until about 1 o'clock, and I shut it down. But, you know, not even the usual, at least one or two contacts from Texas. I pretty much stayed in Brooklyn. I don't think I even talked to Queens, because I think Andy took a vacation, so he wasn't around then. So it was just Brooklyn.
It happens where you just have a few local guys that will get in there. Well, there was one guy that tried calling me, and I had like a 1x1 or a 3x3 reception of this guy, and I think he was in Manhattan, according to his call sign information. Was it W-A-2-L-Y-S? I don't know if you know that call. I have to look in my notes on my phone if that is the correct call. But he was extremely weak to me. And if he was very weak to me when I was on the pier, he had a really, really tough tier signal. And another fellow that I thought I would hear, who's over near Union Square, Mike HKT, told me he was barely even able to hear us because I asked him to look for me on 380 the other day. But yeah, I got in there late. I think I got on the radio after like 1:30, 2 o'clock.
You rang WA2HKT?
The other day on the radio, you said you couldn't hear me.
I don't know if I could or I couldn't. Yeah, I was just passing by. Glad to see some activity on the Kings County Radio Club repeater. Yeah, what frequency are we trying it on?
We're on 28380. I was on with Ruben. It was after Roy closed the net. We have our net every Sunday at 11, I think, as I reminded you, but I guess you were unable to hear us. We have our week, or actually it's twice a month, Kings County Radio Club TechNet, and our club call is KCQRC, as you probably know. So Roy's running the net. I was just talking with them about, I guess, just to keep the activity out here for our TechNet every or a couple of times a month, I should say.
That was very good. Yeah, I was just passing through and I heard the activity, wanted to say hi. I'm the QSY, but great to hear the club's still running. I've been licensed since 69, so yeah, I cut my teeth on this repeater. All right, guys, let me go QSY, and we'll catch up with you guys again. Great to hear you in there. Whiskey Alpha 2, Hotel Kilo Tango.
What was it, 56 years ago, if you remember correctly, with the, what was it, WR2, you know, I'm not going to get the call correct, I forgot, but back then, I think the repeater was by Cabin Plaza, but I could be wrong about that, right?
You're talking about this machine, I don't know.
Well, it was a different machine at a different place, so I don't know, you know, existentialism of, you know, what makes a repeater the same repeater. Anyway, I was talking to Stu Sunday as well. You mentioned Stu earlier.
Well, that's, I was trying to plug the net on his repeater a few days ago, and I was out there with Ruben on 380 a few days ago. After the net had ended. So I guess, yeah, I'm glad that Stu showed up.
He's sort of a semi-regular. He comes on, he tells me, this is one of the few times I have Sunday off, so I thought I'd come by and say hello. So I appreciate that.
That's good. It's always good to spur more activity on our local nets. Mike, did you sign off? Something I heard somebody double with Roy, but you got covered up.
I'm going to QSY. I just want to say hello to you guys, and we'll catch up with you again. You guys have a great night, and WA2HKT will be QSY.
I guess I'll hear you on the other machine, so I'll 673, and I'll probably hear you in a few moments. So back to you, Roy, and I guess we'll give a listen. I don't know if, I didn't hear Bob. Was Bob in here yet?
Yeah, Bob's here, KD2NVB. He came on at the beginning of the hour.
Let me make sure I have it. I had the radio turned down low. I didn't hear Bob before. So, Bob, quick question. I guess you were unable to make the meeting. I'm guessing maybe you had a gig last week we have in-person meetings again. And actually, you could probably walk to the next meeting if you're able to come in June.
Where's the next meeting? I did have a gig last... actually, a gig as a photographer. I photographed the Harlem Chamber Players. Anyway, yeah, I had a gig. And walk to it, isn't it, in Bay Ridge? Back to you.
I thought it was Bay Ridge till I got an email. Then I'm like, oh, it's in Windsor Terrace. So it's 10th Avenue, Windsor Terrace, right across from... right near Prospect Park, 10th Avenue. I can get you the address.
Oh yeah, I think it's on the web page. Yeah, I can't walk to it. It's about 2 to 2.5 miles. I mean, I could, but I'm not really. I could take the. I'll look at it. I'll take the bus or something. It's probably some way I could do it, not too difficultly. Problem is, I usually do a Zoom just before that, so. I may not be coming in person too often, but I'll try to do it next month. We'll see. I could probably do it.
It's 1511 10th Avenue.
Okay, just over with. Let me give it to that station. All right, I guess not, but okay, let me give it back to you, and hopefully we'll see you at the next meeting and all that good stuff. So, Bob, I was just thinking... about something technical I can bring up. I asked about anything new with amateur radio wise, technically, if they're doing anything else, but I guess we haven't learned anything yet, maybe until this coming weekend. How about the areas of video and or still photography?
Talking to me, this is KDUSVP. Actually, personally, I guess I got a mirrorless camera system for birding. So that's new to me. I went with Micro Four Thirds, so I have a little bit more of the noise issue, but it's an interesting, it has that technology like the Z8s and A1s. It's pretty amazing getting the birds in focus. OM1 Mark II, and I have the 300 Pro, Prime, which is like a 600 full frame reach, plus a converter when I want to use it. So that's what's new to me in photography for birding, but those gigs I do, I just use my Pentaxes.
Yeah, well, congrats on the new purchase, and I'm sure you're getting some beautiful shots with that new camera. They're really doing some pretty amazing stuff with the tech in some of these cameras now. When it comes to the software that actually, if you're trying to track either insects or a hummingbird or something like that, pretty amazing stuff.
It's almost like, oh, I can't take credit for it anymore. Now I can spend my effort trying to frame the picture and get a nice background, et cetera, not just thinking about getting the darn bird in focus.
The last time I went birding, I go by, Greenwood quite often, which is, right near you. And I don't really talk to many photographers there, but the last time I was in the Bronx Botanical Gardens, which was last year, I was talking to somebody that got one of the newer Canon cameras and even one of the Sonys. And they were showing me the different modes, like you were just mentioning, to be able to capture a certain type of shot that they were trying to get. And you got the software on there now, which is tracking the subject. And it's pretty amazing stuff. It's only going to, I think, be improving, I guess, as they're integrating all that tech into these cameras. And Four Thirds, I figured you would eventually do that, get one of these mirrorless cameras. I know Roy, a few years ago, ended up getting a pretty nice camera, but I don't know how much you've been doing with it, Roy.
Unfortunately, not much. Yeah, it's a Sony. It's a very nice camera. They had an update of it, I think, a year or so ago. But the old one still would be as useful as I would need anyway. But I don't know. I just kind of, good old coronavirus just kind of put an abrupt end, and I never actually started it up again. It's on my list of things to do.
Be here. Yeah, you don't need, if you're not doing birds or sports, or you don't need that stuff so much, Anyway, back to you guys.
This is the KC2 KCQRC repeater. Please use PL88.5.
So
DJI just released their newest Mavic drone with a Hasselblad lens selection. It looks amazing, and it's priced rather high.
A number of new Mavic drones that came out. Which model are you talking about? And one of our friends, I don't know if he's still a current member, I haven't looked him up, used to join us on our nets. He's active, I think, with that drone club that meets over by that park there off the Bell Parkway. I'm trying to remember the name of that park. I haven't spoken to him in a very long time.
Chisholm Park?
No, it's the other park in Bensonhurst. You know what, I could pull it up online, I'll tell you which park it is.
What about the one off of Bay Parkway?
A little further in, closer to the bridge. But there's actually a club that meets up there that launches drones.
I got two drones here. I'm dying to take them out, and it's going to rain for the next couple of days.
I think the latest one is a Mavic 4.
Cheap little Chinese drones, they were like $20 a piece.
Yeah, well, the Mavic's going for something like $3,000.
JKD2LRX has one of those big Mamba Jamba drones. His brother got him it for his birthday, and he has not taken it out yet. He says he's afraid to bang it up.
Well, I mean, that's the problem with these expensive ones. You could lose a lot of money. Plus the fact that when they're above a certain weight, you really have to get a license from the authorities. If you don't and you get caught, you can get a ticket.
I could be wrong on this. I could be mistaken. But didn't somebody years ago, a young guy, or maybe it was a girl, or I hate to even say it, I think maybe it was a trans person, But didn't somebody join the club just to do to use the 2 meter frequency for the drones? I think we were still meeting at the hospital when that person came. I forget who the heck it was though.
Well, I don't think we ever actually had someone who said that they were trans. The closest was a person who used to travel between the Bronx and Hollywood, and they were in show business, and they presented as being fluid, but they were bald and they had a beard. So I don't know how fluid that is. The closest to what you mentioned, we had a kid who showed up from technical high school who was interested in becoming a ham because he was interested in telemetry and weather balloons and such. So you might be thinking of him.
Could be. Not sure. But obviously that would make sense. All right. Oh, and you know, just I heard a little while ago about the Yaesu and the field day. A few days ago, Yaesu did come out with a price, so I'm assuming that it got FCC approved because it's on Gigaparts. So, for everyone out there, you can get the FTX-1 field radio for $14.99.95, or you can get the Optima, the FTX-1 Optima, which has a 100-watt component that it attaches to for $18.99. I had a feeling these radios were going to be in this price range. So, yeah, it's a little out of my range, but I'll be waiting to get this radio for sure.
Okay, thanks for the information.
And just to let everybody know, all I need is someone to say to me, "Hey, Joe, let's go to the Hamvention this year. I'm in my car. I'm ready to go."
Okay, I hope you find that person. Let me see if I could scratch up any more people for the technical portion of this net. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. So if there's anyone out there listening to us who has any technical questions or wants to discuss some kind of technical topic tonight, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself. I guess not. Well, if anyone has any closing comments to make before I close this particular session, feel free.
See your, just make sure I have it. Bring up the
name of that park. I think it's called Calvert Park. They have a number of ball fields over there, soccer fields, and there's also an area where licensed, talking about drone licensing, you got to be licensed, and I think part of that club, where you can use your drone by Calvert Park.
Yes, dude.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. They don't want people breaking the law under their auspices.
Really nice place to play amateur radio, man, especially if you drive all the way towards the back. You're talking like where Four Diamonds used to be. Well, actually, it's a little bit before Four Diamonds. If you're coming down that service road, Shore Parkway, I think it is, it's a little bit before that.
They're called Cruise New York, Empire City Water Sports, whatever that is. It juts way out to the water, but it's actually not a bad area also for talking about birding. Bob, you can check that out. A number of people in Brooklyn that are into birding like that park. There's some interesting shots you can take down there. I've done some walking over there before, and Joe, I'd agree with you. Operating portable, definitely a nice place.
John VP, what's the name of the park again?
Well, the name of the park is called, I'll spell, Calvert. It's C-A-L-V-E-R-T, Vau Park. The second word is spelled V-A-U-X Park.
French thing, yeah. Calvert, V-A-U-X. Calvert Vau or whatever. I never heard of it. I'll Google it. You could actually drive around that whole park. I actually went back there. And, there's ball fields out there. On the other side of the water is Four Diamonds. Well, now I think they call it Six Diamonds, so they must have Six Diamonds there now. But back in the day, it was only Four Diamonds to me. I still call it Four Diamonds. But, yeah, there's a whole bunch of, sporting stuff over there. I didn't know that they did drones and stuff over there. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I was going to try and make that like my little secret hideaway to like go do radio stuff over there. Well, now all you guys know.
KC2RC.
It's a great place to play radio. There's a lot of places in Brooklyn you could go portable now that we're into the warmer days of May. And look, even if you want to be a little more hardy, even in this weather, if it's not a pouring rain, if it's just a little misty like it is now, it's not that bad to go out and play a little radio. So I got to maybe update my radio, my KX3, blow some of the cobwebs and the dust off of it, and get out and play portable on both CW and voice.
You know, I got to tell you, the other day I was driving on the Bell Parkway and I was passing Plum Beach. And I was saying to myself, you know, that would be a great spot to work stations as well over there. But I said, you know, it might be a little risky. The last time I was there, I was knocking on people's windows. Hey, what are you doing in there?
Roy would agree that would be a nice sociable thing to do. Yeah, that's definitely been a well-known parking place for a long time. It's funny. Just before, I guess you close it out, what is it, almost 10 after 10, there's been talk about which antennas to use for either operating from a stationary position right here from the base or a portable. People are talking about, heard some guys talking about an NFET antenna people refer to as a dipole, but I guess it's more of like a ZEP type of design. And what is favorable, what is best to use for quick installation, either into a tree or if you have a tripod or something, or if you just want to bring your own equipment, rather wire, and just set up something real quick. What is desirable for that'll work well for portable operation? That's the best bang for the buck. The answer I would personally give is just like a random wire, like a 50-foot wire, and if you have a good grounding rod, just to use something like that. But some people would also recommend what's referred to, and I don't think it's the proper term, an NFET dipole. I think they mean a ZEP.
Well, Well, I think you're talking about an NFED, and you really got to stretch the understanding of things to call it a dipole. Unfortunately, the way that it's theoretically described is you're taking a center-fed half-wave antenna, and you're sliding the feed point to the end of it. So it's in some aspects, it's still a theoretical dipole, even though it really only has one leg. The counterpoise is just a short length of the transmission line or the grounding wire. So the benefit of something like that is not a very efficient design, but it's multi-band, and it only has two attachment points. So whereas a dipole would have three attachment points, it's a little bit easier to mount.
Dan, this different option, what to set up for either for a field day or for just for portable operation. And I've used, I played around with the loop from the Alex loop, which is fine and dandy. It works nicely. It's not bad. But I think for going to a park or either at Floyd Bannon or wherever, I'd like to get something. You can just make something easily. You can just throw up real quick for 40 or even 80 and up. I guess it's something we could talk about here or I guess at our next meeting. Just something to set up real quick, inexpensive antenna for whether QRP or even if you're operating 100 watts, you can set up real quick in the park. So just throwing that out there after Joe reminded me about just getting out and operating in the warmer months.
So I got it. Let me see if I got it. I got to tell you, man, I love these telescopic whips, man. I've got a 17 and a half foot telescopic whip, and with a decent counterpoise, I get everything from 20 to 6 meters without a problem, just by adjusting the whip a little bit. Got a homebrew little 40 meter resonator that I made, a little coil with some enamel wire wrapped around it. I used some Chart Online to make it. I got the Wolf River coil. I got to tell you, these telescopic whips, man, they are going to start dominating POTA. They're small, they're lightweight, they fit in your knapsack, they fit anywhere. And you can just pull them out and start working everybody. And, you know, I have not experimented with it yet, and I know it's only 17 and a half feet, but I'm wondering what a 9-to-1 would do with 17 and a half feet. What band I'd be able to tune? Alpha Charlie 2 Alpha Echo.
I don't know. Maybe Roy might, or Bob might have something to say about that. I don't know if you want to close it out just yet, Roy, but was just thinking about it. And yeah, I think that's a nice option for the higher bands. I found that using a vertical for 20 and up ain't so bad. It's okay, especially if you're near the water, near the salt water, like when we operate for field day. They seem to work okay. But I would think from like a place like that park I was thinking about, even if you can get by a tree, bring yourself a chair, you know, bring a portable chair with you, and get yourself under a tree, just to throw something up real quick, you know, with some weights. I know our friend Anthony, WW2W, when we used to go portable, he used to do that. And we'd get up a nice either random wire or, you know, with we'd bring a ground, not a strap, but a grounding rod with us. And just with like 50 feet of wire, work the world from that. And they seem to behave, they work better on the lower bands, like maybe not 80, but 40 meters, 40 and 20, and at 15. They would seem to work pretty well on. What's your take on that, Roy? What do you like for portable?
I think a full half wave NFED gives you a lot more efficiency and a kind of better idea of what it's capable of. With the 9-to-1, you're really going to be operating that whip as a non-resonant, which you know, the reason why, if you look on the internet for the length of a non-resonant NFED, you'll see 3,000 different entries, because no one's kind of decided on the optimum length. So, you know, you give it a try. If it doesn't work, work, you can adjust the whip. The only problem I have with whips is whips are very nice at the beginning, but they're possible to corrode as time goes on, and then they produce a little bit more problem using. So it sort of depends upon the manufacturing and what kind of metals these things are made out of.
For this half-wave dipole, I could tell you also from operating portable, used a regular, as Roe was mentioning, half-wave dipole cut for 40 as well as 20. I think once I was using one of those crisscross dipoles, which you could also solder the legs from the center balun. Just feed that with, if you'd like, with coax. That would work pretty well. I've gotten out very well just running 10 or 20 watts CW. But it's been a very long time since I've done that, but many, many years. I remember when I was newly licensed, we would operate portable with the car batteries back then. Back then we'd have those compact batteries, light lithium bio-NO batteries we've got today. I was going to mention, Roy, also, I was looking at some of the batteries that are using the same chemistry as those bio-NO batteries we have. And I found a company, I guess another one of these Chinese companies, and they're very competitively priced now, much cheaper for these batteries and chargers. Aside from having a 30 ampere battery for operating portable, wouldn't mind getting something else as a backup. So, all right, I don't know if, I guess if you want to close it out, but I just figured I'd throw that out there, being that Joe has got me thinking about now what's a plan for our spring and summer for operating portable.
Welcome to the KC2RC repeater system.
Yeah, the Chinese have brought down the price of lithium iron phosphate cells, so the price have gone down, but now we got tariffs to deal with, so I don't know how that's going to affect everything. So yeah, it's still much more expensive than lead acid, but it's less expensive than it was years ago. They're putting them in all their electric vehicles in China.
A manufacturer, they're selling on eBay, rather, store, I guess based out of China, but they've got a distribution on the West Coast. 50-amp battery, what is it, about 50 amps? Or no, more than that, for, I think it was about $150 or something. Very reasonably priced, low weight, and if you choose to operate QRO and you can't make the contact, you have a rig that'll run it, like a 7100 or a 706 or let's say a QRP rig with one of these small amps, if you want to carry a bit more weight with you. Sometimes 100 watts, especially on phone, can help a lot to make that contact, especially if you've got a decent, decent gain antenna, or even a basic dipole like you were mentioning, a half-wave antenna.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of QRP. If it can handle 100 watts, I would throw it at people. Because, as it goes down, unless you love CW, phone kind of is not a great thing for QRPing.
Well, I found that 5 watts on CW, you can get out even 100 milliwatts. But the sweet spot, I think, for the contact on CW on 40, I think, is 10 watts. 10 watts, yeah, it's going to be more efficient, even with the PSK, or I should say now FT8. 10 watts into an efficient antenna is pretty good at that mode.
Yeah, digital modes are much more efficient than voice modes.
Okay, very good. Yeah, Joe just sent me a one of these solar battery boxes. Very nice. So, 10 watts, I think, is pretty good. I've got some nice portable keys, as well as an integrated key I can use on the KX3 or the K2. I've got one of those rigs as well, and got another one inherited from a buddy of ours, which I haven't fired up in years. I think it's a 40-meter 5-watt QRP radio. I found that the digital modes, including CW, is pretty good, and you've still got some really good operators out there that will listen for those weak signals. When you're operating QRP, You've also got to make sure you're not using a rinky-dink compromised antenna.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, I mean, with FT8, it doesn't take any training, you know, as long as you have some device that's capable of operating on a level of FT8. And if you go over to the bands, no matter what time of day, it's always jumping. There's always going to be guys trying to make contacts on FT8.
Definitely, definitely. I'll listen even now at almost, 22 after the hour, 10:22. On 10 meters, and I'll hear some signals out of the ether. I just gave it a test, what was it, yesterday or the other night, on 10 meters, and I saw, I actually did make some contacts late at night, but I found that running more than 50 or 100 watts does help. It's a low signal mode. If your signal is very weak, but it does help to run a bit more power on FT8 or FT4. So I saw I was getting into New Zealand, Australia, and to quite a number of states. So it's a pretty amazing mode when you think the band is shut down.
Yeah, it has that multiple beauty of high demand and low signal strength requirements. Although Rhea used to often say that she used FT8 at 1,500 watts. So go figure.
If you're running that much power, you must have a lot of headroom with that amplifier, because most I think I would run is 200-300 watts with my amp. So you must have something that can go way beyond legal limit. If you can run a constant carrier mode on FT8 at 1,500 watts, but I just run the power I need to make the contact if I need to QRO and bring it up. But, you know the saying, if you can't work them if you can't hear them.
BS on that 1,500 watt story. I think they would end up with a blown up amplifier after maybe like the fifth or sixth key up. Either that, or they were trying to like fry some eggs on the top of it or something like that. That there is no way. Listen, even if that amplifier was a 3,000 watt amplifier at 1,500 watts, did you know how to do it? He'd be sweating his cojones off sitting next to that amplifier.
Well, some people just have to brag, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, full duty, you know, you'd wreck any kind of normal. You know, I mean, there are amplifiers out there that could do it. You know, if you got some kind of old-time AM transmitter and you rewired the thing, you might be able to push that kind of power. But I think she was just bragging for the sake of bragging.
1,500 watts on FT8. At that point, that's just sheer gluttony, if that was true. I got to tell you, this radio has never, this FT991 has never broken 20 watts, especially on FT8. I've done most of it at 5 watts. There's no need for that. there's just no need for it. Alpha, listen. The only difference between 20 watts and 100 watts is what, Roy? About a decibel gain? One? There's absolutely no need for that.
Actually, it's about an S1, so it's about a 7 decibel gain.
I mean, that's a little, for FT8, I think that's a little crazy. Even at 100 watts, that's nuts. I would set my radio to about 5 watts, and then I would run my 1,500 watt amplifier at about maybe what, 100 watts, and that would keep everything fresh and dandy to keep on going. Ay ay ay, that's insane. AC2AE.
Yep, I agree with you.
Depends obviously on how efficient your antenna system is also. And you have to know how your station works on any given band, depending on the antenna you're using. Because I could tell you that with my situation on some of the bands, I have a lot of noise, and I could run as much power as I want, but I'm not going to be able to hear the guy coming back to me. So, for example, if I get on 80 meters, I could run very low power, and I'm going to get diminishing returns if I decide to QRO, go higher, because if somebody's coming back to me out down in the ether, I'm not going to hear them and I'm not going to be able to make the contact, so I'll keep it low. On a band like 20 or actually 10 meters, I have it more of a shot. I'll give you an example. I was trying to get a station, I think, in Southeast Asia. It might have been somebody, I think, in Vietnam a while back, and I had to bring the power up to, because we kept trying to connect to each other, and I had to bring it to at least over 100 some odd watt level till the guy was able to hear me, because 20 meters, luckily, by my location, I don't have a lot of QRM or QRN. Some other bands, like some of the lower bands, and even 10 meters, I tend to get a little bit of noise here. So if you can't hear some of those stations down in the ether, you know, you could run as much as you want. It's not going to help. It depends on what you're able to hear.
This is the KC2RC repeater. Please use PL88.5.
Yeah, you don't want to be a crocodile. You don't want to be an elephant either.
To get them, and specifically on FT8, you know, you figure just because you hear them, they hear you, but it's not necessarily so.
So what I do, double, I think that was Roy, I didn't listen to the input. So I'll run the amplifier, and I'll run anywhere from 3 to 5 watts from the exciter up to maybe 10 or 15 watts, depending on what I need to run, do. So I'll keep the 7600 ICOM nice and cool while the amplifier does the work, whether I have to run 20 watts or 30 or 50 or 100, 150 watts. Roy, I think that was you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say you don't want to be a crocodile and you don't want to be an elephant.
Exactly. You know, one of the things when I had my antennas on the roof, and this was specifically for VHF on the 2-meter band, and, just picture it as like an umbrella, like me having a gigantic umbrella. Now, I would hear all these groups out in the distance, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Long Island, all these groups having like these conversations. They were all within their umbrellas of their group, but because my antenna was so high, everybody was under my umbrella. So it's like I could listen to like different groups and hear different conversations, you know, interfering with each other, and these guys never heard each other at all, you know. So you know, that was a whole different problem with having an antenna that high. Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo.
Yeah, the secret of UHF and VHF is elevation, elevation, elevation.
Great with the beam, I got to tell you.
Wasami directionals get out equally poor in all directions, but I tell you though, with a beam 432, 146 or whatever, if you're going to be on FM phone, if you have a stacked array on FM, vertically polarized, for the FM portion, not for sideband. Sideband, you probably want to do horizontal. That's going to make a big difference. You could run very low power and run hardline, or, you know, let's say 213U or whatever, to that bad, those bad boys up there if you've got a bunch of beams in a stacked array. And I'll say the same thing, like 6/6 horizontal for 10 meters. You know, my dream antenna would be like a Telerec 6/6 with a 40-foot tower. That's a lot of metal up there on top of this building here. You know, just running 100 to, let's say, 500 watts is pretty good. You don't need to go crazy. Like that guy, Randy, he's got a 7800 amongst a number of radios, Flex, I think, equipment, Anon, other ICOM radios, Kenwood's. He could hear a gnat running 100 watts in the Upper West Side, some guy from his apartment running an indoor wire when we're on our 10-meter net. In Arizona, we don't hear it, but depends on what you're able to pull in and what you're able to transmit at.
I haven't heard from Randy on the 10-meter net in years.
Kill antenna for most of these bands, especially the upper bands, is definitely an array, a stacked array, or even just a basic beam antenna. I've got to tell you, they work very well. They're a bit more maintenance. You got a lot more metal up in the air, but they work very nicely. You don't need, you could run more power, but you don't always need to.
You got to worry about all that wind resistance, though.
Sure, there are a lot more, there's a lot more maintenance involved with those suckers. There's a guy who's on Facebook. He's up in Maine. what is it, W1 or W2RE? I don't know, he might have a 2 call up in Maine. He's got substation online.
Well, guys, I think I'm going to call it a night, so let me recite my little going-away spiel, and I'll leave the repeater for you to chat.
I have one question for Joe before I guess after you close it out. So I'll say 7-3, Roy, back to you, and I guess you can close it out.
Okay, very good. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be June 4th, which will be a hybrid meeting with a virtual meeting using the Zoom software, and club members will be emailed with the details of the meeting, the physical location of the in-person meeting. Okay, let's see if I'm back. Yes, I'm back. I got thrown off of Echo Link on my secondary computer. Anyway, Knights of Columbus, 1511 10th Avenue, non-members wishing to join a general meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 9:30 when we get kicked out of the Knights of Columbus. We have a weekly 2-meter club net every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m. And we also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 or nearby. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet, as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this TechNet, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up, but we'll be back May 28th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob KD2NVB. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy AC2GS going clear and getting the heck out of here. Have a great week. Stay safe. Be well. We'll talk to you down the line. This is AC2GS clear.